Hey everybody, I'm Nicholas Ashbaugh. Many of you recognize me from YouTube. I'm also a psychic medium. I spent the first part of my life actually hiding that part of me, just trying to be normal. But the minute that I embraced the things that made me unique, that's when my life started to get interesting. This is why I'm so excited to be launching this podcast series where we can delve into all things paranormal, metaphysical, and unknown. My first guest, Adam Berry, fits all of those categories perfectly. He's the executive producer and co-star of Kindred Spirits. You may also recognize him from his time on Ghost Hunters, and he just released a brand new book, which we're going to talk about today, and it's called Goodbye Hello. Well, welcome, Adam. Great to have you here. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Very good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
So people on my channel may be wondering, like, what drew me to inviting you as a guest here? And I think there's a lot of mutual overlap with, even though we do very different work, I appreciate that you infuse your work with like integrity and enthusiasm. You have like this common goal that I do, which is normalizing the spiritual experience, trying to make it more comfortable for people to talk about this in everyday life. And in your series, as well as the book here, one of the things that I really liked is you help people overcome the fear of the unknown. There's a lot of healing that happens also in the TV series where it's not just sensationalized. There's a lot of sort of paranormal stuff out there where it's kind of like, it's just for the spectacle of it. But I think that what I really like about your work is that you're trying to understand the emotions of the people that are going through things, you know, also the spiritual side, what they're going through, and you're trying to kind of help people meet in the middle. Is that a fair kind of summary of everything?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when people think of the paranormal, or especially when they think of paranormal reality television, their first thought is, oh, this is going to be like a fast, scary ride, and it's going to be an adrenaline rush. And they're thinking of it as entertainment, which it is. I think it is better to approach paranormal investigation with a thought about who you're actually speaking to, who's on the other side of that conversation, the humanization of ghosts, basically, you know. And I think once you put it into that perspective, your view of paranormal investigation is very different. The activity might be aggressive, but the person causing the activity needs something or wants something. And I think it's best to try to figure out what that is instead of just experiencing the activity and saying, oh, that's cool. You know, it's trying to help them better understand their own position in the afterlife.
Yeah, I think there was something in your book about instead of trying to go after the evidence, you're really trying to understand what's going on and also ask the right questions, because there have been times on the series where sometimes ghosts speak in a different language. You have to get an interpreter. Sometimes because of maybe an aggressive approach, they get scared, and we don't always think about that too. So it is about understanding what's going on in order to solve a mystery, because there is, your work is very nuanced. It's not just going in using tech gear and trying to get things. It's basically, why is it happening? Who are you talking to? Why are people afraid? And it's, so there is this sort of like, it is investigation for sure, but there's also, I would say, a little bit of therapist that's going on. You're not a therapist, but you're trying to figure out the psychology, right?
It's exactly what I was going to say to you. It's almost like being a ghost therapist. You're inviting the spirit to lay down on a spiritual couch, and you're trying to unpack the baggage that they have carried into the next journey of their existence. And it's more, honestly, it's more fun to me. When you, like, as human beings, we tend to hang out with our friends and we have a good time, but then there are times your friends need you for certain things, or they're going through something. And as humans, and that human nature kicks in, and you want to help them, and you want to say, how can I help you? Like, what can I do? What can we do together? What's happening? I'll be there for you. And I think the people in the afterlife need the same thing. I mean, and it's just harder for them to get it. And I think it's more enjoyable and fulfilling to make a difference on both sides of the equation, the living and the dead, than it is to just do a one-sided conversation and experience.
There were a few light bulb moments that you talked about in the book. One of them was really poignant. I think you were talking about a woman that was dealing with a terminal illness, and she came up to you, and it wasn't like the question that you thought she would ask you. She was asking, instead of like, can I connect with people on the other side? She wanted to know how, like when she was a spirit, she could connect with her family. Can you describe how that kind of light bulb moment helped shape a different sort of view of ghosts and paranormal? Because you covered in the book a little bit, but I'd love to hear it in your own words.
Yeah, here. For sure. I mean, this was a very long time ago. I think this was, sure. 14 years ago.
Yep.
But at the time, I had just started Ghost Hunters, and we would go to these events, which we still do, where there's panel discussions about what you do, and people ask questions like, what's your scariest experience? What got you into this? And those are fine and wonderful questions. And, you know, that's what was happening. And this is one of the first times I'd ever done something like this. And after it was all over, this lady came up to me, and I expected her to ask me another generic question, how do you feel about working on Ghost Hunters now? Or what's the scariest thing that happened to you at Waverly Hills? And, you know, she looked at me and she said, she didn't even hesitate, which was shocking at first, because I've never been asked that. And I'm at this point, I'm like 26 years old. And
right. Yes.
And so she says to me, she says, I have a terminal illness. I've been given X amount of time to be on this earth. How can I keep in touch with my family after I'm gone? It was simple. It was such a simple question, right? And I obviously had no answer. And I, in a way, I still don't. Like, I don't know how it actually occurs on the other side.
It's different for every person, too. Like, everyone has it. You were talking about the lens through which we view the spiritual realm. I think it does affect how we experience that realm mm-hmm. afterwards. So, yeah, right. It actually probably is a little different for each person. But I think... you were honest.
Sure.
That was so cool. You said, I don't know, right? Isn't that something like that?
I don't know. I mean, what was interesting is I was like, I don't know. I said, I'm sorry. I apologize that I don't know. I think that was a great answer, though,
because we're all figuring stuff out. Yeah.
Right. And the thing is, honesty for us, and well, for me specifically, has always been the way it should be in this world, right? I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. I'm telling you, my experience is, this is what happened. It's all theory. Let's go with it, right?
Yep.
But I said, I don't know. And the fascinating thing about it for me was her face didn't change. She didn't get disappointed. She didn't get upset. She might have anticipated that answer, But I remember saying to her, well, if you find out, will you come back and let me know?
I thought that was so cool. Keep us posted on that, please.
Yeah, keep me updated, right? Like,
yeah.
If there is a purpose, like if you can come tell me, and I haven't heard from her. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And so for me, it's not necessarily a sad thing. I'm listening.
She could also be at peace. You mentioned no news can be good news,
no news is good news. She could be at peace. If she only has a certain amount of energy on the other side, why waste it on someone you don't know?
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Even if it's for science, but like, why waste it for somebody else? So I, that moment stuck with me for a long time. I remember going back to the hotel room, getting kind of emotional and being like, wow, that was really heavy.
But yeah,
then
it
really gave me the view of like what we're actually doing here. There are going to be a lot of people who are really into it for the thrill of the paranormal. And then there are going to be people that look at the paranormal as a way of trying to understand what is about to happen to themselves or to a family member. That moment, deep down, sparked the inspiration for this entire book.
Kind of building off that story, I think this also changed the view of the word ghost, because I think sometimes when we are looking at the paranormal, it's kind of like this abstracted thing. A ghost is an entity, it's an energy, we don't understand it, but very much with what you're doing, most of the ghosts you experience, they're humans, right? And this I thought was also like a light bulb moment, which is once you understand that there's a human on the other side of this activity, then it is about trying to understand and kind of communicate with it from a human perspective too. I guess my question here is, how has your approach towards spirits changed throughout your investigative career?
Well, when you start out, you just want experiences. You're not really thinking about who's on the other side of that conversation, right?
Yeah.
You want that knock, you want to hear it. And don't get me wrong, that stuff's amazing. It still is. Like if you see us reacting really crazy on Kindred Spirits, there's a reason for it. Like there's a lot of things that don't shock us anymore. So, but and that's still exciting. But It's a one-sided, I don't want to say selfish, but it feels that way for me now. It's like, it's a one-sided thing. And don't get me wrong. It is okay to do that. If you're not in, if you don't think you are in a good space to be a ghost therapist, don't try to do it. Right.
Yeah.
Just go and have your experience and let it be what it is. And, you know that on the other end of that conversation is a human person, but you don't have to set out and be a superhero. Right. Like, that's not the point.
Right.
But for me, it changed because I think of it that way. I mean, yes, I have experienced entities that I have felt haven't been in human form, right? Like that are maybe connected to the earth or that are something that has been here forever and ever and ever, and it doesn't have a human form. But 99% of the time, it's going to be a mother, a father, an uncle, an aunt. On the other end of that,
particularly with the type of work that you're doing too, because
of course,
people are coming
right.
to you with the, oftentimes it's like after a death or they're in a haunted house. So yeah, it makes a lot of
right.
sense.
Right. And so it's best to approach it that way. And again, you approach it as if you are entering you're entering a party and you don't know anyone at that party. And you say, my name is Adam. What is your name? Very simple. Like, how are you today? Like, the people who live here, you know, it's hard to see you, it's hard to hear you, but I can communicate with you. And it's building a trust, just like you would build with someone else. And I talk about it in the book, but I think there are a few things that are on the other side in spiritual form that they need and want, that we want. So communication, compassion, understanding, love, mm-hmm. respect, and all of those things can still be given from a place of sincerity. And you don't need to know that person. You're just literally human to human having a conversation, except it's just there in a
different form,
spiritual
yeah.
place.
Exactly. I think that was a big aha as I was reading the book too, is just that if we just look at ghosts as having the same wants and needs as us, sometimes even being confused and not even aware that they're a ghost, because there were several
right.
examples of that in the book and also in your TV series, that it gives you a sense of empathy and curiosity. And I'm assuming like one of your other tools is just to go in without assumptions, because mm-hmm. Those lenses get in the way of really knowing what's going on.
Right.
So
right.
many
that's
times.
The biggest,
yeah, go ahead.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's, we always try to blank slate everything, even if we know what they're experiencing. It's honestly, it's hi, my name is Adam. What is your name? And then wait. And then based on that, no response or response, you continue to just engage from a purely like level perspective without
yeah.
anything around it. Because, you know, we've encountered spirits who seem kind of aggressive and scared, and the family's like, oh, this is crazy. It's a demon. It's so nuts. And it turns out to be this like sweet old lady who doesn't understand why she's still on this earthly plane.
Yeah.
And it breaks your heart, but
that
we
one
would
was
not
sad,
have found out. Yeah. And we wouldn't have found that out if we didn't approach it from such a level perspective. If we went in guns blazing, I mean, figuratively speaking, you already have an assumption of what is it you're doing and what is it you're talking to? Like, who are you talking to? And it ruins it. It can just ruin your entire perspective.
One thing that was really cool in the book, I've heard you talk about Gettysburg before, but I didn't know about the ghost dog thing until the book. That might have been the first time. So for those that are tuning in, it sounds like you lived in a haunted house as a kid. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. So I grew up in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Shout out Muscle Shoals. Alabama. So I grew up in a house that my parents rented, and they were told that it was haunted before they moved in.
Crazy.
By a woman,
yeah.
a lady named Gertrude. They moved in. I mean, they moved in because they needed more space. They were having a family. They wanted to rent a place before they bought a place. And
right.
so I spent, you know, until I was in fourth grade, birth to fourth grade, living in that house. And there was all kinds of activity, but the ghost dog thing was the one thing that happened where I knew without a doubt that there was something else in this world besides
yep.
just human people. You know, I woke up in the middle of the night and I could hear what sounded like a dog scratching on the bathroom door that was right outside a room that I share with my brother. And you could hear the dog walking into the room. You could hear its nails on the hardwood floor. you could hear like the jingle of the dog collar. Yeah. And then when it got to the TV at the foot of the bed, it was one of those like old tube TVs where if you push the button to turn it off, it would glow a little bit, you know?
Right.
And so every time the sound got to the television, the TV would glow a little bit, and then it would repeat. And so we kept doing it. And I remember processing it as this kid. I was like, I want to get up and run out to my parents, but I can't because the sound is in the doorway and I don't want to go that way. I was like, is it my aunt or aunt, my aunt Patsy? Like she had a dog. Maybe she showed up in the middle of the night for some reason. She's sleeping over, but I don't see a dog. That's weird. We didn't own any animals or pets when we lived in that house. And it just became this weirdly bizarre moment of like, this is supernatural. This is not right.
Yeah.
And I remember taking all the courage that I had in my little child body. And I like grabbed the sheets on the side of the bed and I just yelled, stop. And it completely quit. And there was this weird sense of like, oh, I did that, right? Like I controlled the scenario.
Boundaries,
I didn't let it get the best of me.
Yeah,
setting boundaries just like you would do with any other spirit or ghost. And there was this sense of calm that came over me and I laid down and went back to sleep. And I had told my mother about it like maybe the next day or a couple days after. But she never really talked to me about it until I wrote this book and I was interviewing about it. And she was like, well, I guess, you know, the house was haunted when you came over and told me about that ghost dog. I guess it was haunted, you know? And I'm like, well, at least they believed me to a point, you know? They didn't like shove me off to the corner and say, be quiet about it. They just kind of let me do my own thing, which I think helped me not be afraid of it. And
my parents were the same way. Like years later, when I started doing what I'm doing now, my dad talked about a ghost experience he had, and my mom said, oh, I could kind of like go out of body and look at the room. I'm like, why didn't you tell me this when I was a kid so that when I was experiencing stuff, it would have felt more normal. But I think that generation or the generation before it was very much, and I came from a religious background too, Roman Catholic, you were Baptist.
Baptist.
Both of them are not very open-minded when it comes to the paranormal, but yeah.
No.
I want to say though, I was still impressed with you conjured up that kind of courage and created the boundaries. And as an adult, Adam, what would you go back and maybe imagine you could investigate this now? How would you interact with that dog now that you have like a different tool set and a different approach?
Well, first off, please God, let there be a recorder running, a video camera running.
Right.
Please get the God, EVP. something, please catch it on camera or on audio at least, right? I think what's weird is as a kid, because of our imagination and what we kind of grow out of as you get older, I don't think I wouldn't see it in the same way. I was experiencing, it was happening. It could have been anything. And I said, stop, and it quit, right? Now as an adult with a rational mind, somebody who loves to daydream, but like doesn't sit and play pretend and doesn't have that childlike attitude or ideas.
Right.
I would immediately be like, holy crap. What is that happening? Like that is insane. It's happening over and over. This is insane. I would try to process how naturally it was occurring. Like, okay, well, what can make these sounds? Like, is it an actual animal? Am I not seeing something? Is it something on the roof? Is it echoing down? Like, I would try to process it that way. And then if I couldn't figure it out naturally, then I would be like, wow, that was an incredible experience. And my investigator brain goes into, okay, well, who's attached to the dog? Who had a dog? Did you have a dog? Like, figuring out, did former homeowners have the dog? Are they here with the dog? Is the dog all alone?
Yeah.
It's weird things like that. It's more, it turns into more of a scientific theory situation rather than just having the experience and being like, wow, that was a crazy experience.
I do like that you guys rule it out. That was something that on Ghost Hunters they would do too. It's always make sure that we're not assuming something is something that it is not. So you look at the pipes and you look at other things because there are many things that could cause those sounds. But that's cool. There's also like a journalistic piece. So I think we have like ghost therapist. We have the investigative piece where you and Amy go to like the libraries and look stuff up. And then there's also this sort of trying to ask the right questions thing. So it's much more complicated and nuanced than I think people maybe realize because only a portion of this also makes it to the editing room floor.
And I think one of the most important things that we do that is the hardest is interviewing people that have had experiences, or interviewing the people that are have called you in to talk to you, because they give you a blanket, like, this is what's happening, right? And then you have to like dig into the surface, and you have to ask them more questions, and then they're going to skirt around things that they don't really want to talk about, where they think you're going to think I'm an idiot or a fool. and then you go through that process, and then you interview them yet again, asking the same questions in different ways so that you can actually get the real answer. And sometimes, you know, Chip Coffee likes to use this phrase, they all lie, but that's not necessarily what it means. It doesn't mean that they're lying on purpose. It just means that they are either misremembering or forgetting something that they want to say and they don't tell you right up front, or, you know, or like even like the case that we did where there was a headstone in the backyard. We did not know that there was a headstone in the backyard of this family's house until we showed up. Like, she just failed to mention it because it just didn't seem like that had anything to do with what was happening inside, because it was outside.
That's like the most obvious thing that could cause a haunting.
Right, but it's the thing, right, but it's the thing that we needed to know. I'll be like, wait, you have to tell us these things. So I think that is the one of the hardest things to do. And it takes the journalistic thing. I always feel like maybe I'm Barbara Walters or Oprah, like sitting there trying to like pull out all the information.
Well, I think it is that, because some of it too is maybe people, maybe they forget, but maybe it's just a matter of they're not comfortable talking, and you have to kind of get them past a fear or an old memory that they've kind of pushed beneath the surface. So it makes sense. The name of the show, I was fascinated. It came from your husband, is that correct? Kindred Spirits?
Yeah. Yep.
First of all, I love the name, because kindred is something that you can relate to. But any sort of, how did he come up with that? Because there was a little bit of an explanation in the book, but I was curious, like, was it just channeled and he wrote it on the paper and he liked it?
Well, that's why to the dedication, I call him a phrase maker. It's from one of our favorite plays, Edward Albee, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. She calls him a phrase maker because he just comes up with these things. So he also came up with the title of the book, Goodbye, Hello. So he's good at titles. And I think what's interesting about Kindred Spirits, that is what we put on the pitch. When they asked us, well, if you want to do something, can you just put something together? Even if you're not sold on it, give us an idea. What we put on paper was what we do on Kindred Spirits. And the title of that pitch was Kindred Spirits, title to be decided. So,
and it stuck.
And it stuck. And it seemed, well, it took a minute. Cause you know, they love things that start with ghost or paranormal or like dead. And so I think like we went through like ghost files. They gave us a list of like,
I think it was, it's what sets you apart though too. And it really does sum up what you're trying to do, is which is make a connection. So I think of a kindred spirit, someone I want to hang out with. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and he came up with it.
Shout out to him. That's a great title.
shout out. And I think, you know, it's stuck, and you might have to scroll to the K, and it might not be a G or an A in the lineup, but like just scroll down.
It's good. No, it's fine. And I think also there is a saturation point with some of the other stuff. So again, what's setting you apart is this sort of connection that you're making. So one other thing in the book that I loved was you talked about how your experience doing what you do has actually brought you closer to a spiritual connection. And this is versus a religious sort of organized sort of religion. And I think the way you put it was spirituality is about looking inward, whereas a lot of organized religion is about looking outwards for sort of like just a connection and an understanding. Do you want to talk a little bit about maybe how, because I think it would surprise people. The same is true for what I'm doing. I feel like it's a deeper connection that I have years in after doing this than I ever felt sitting in a church sometimes. Mm-hmm. So what was your experience with that?
Yeah, I mean, there came a point in my life where I hated to be told I needed to feel and think and believe a certain way. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Some people really love that. Some people love structure. They love the organization of it. They love the ritual of it. I mean, because that's what it is, religion, things like that. It's a ritual, you know, especially Roman Catholics, y'all. You love your incense.
So many rituals,
and singing and bells and like whatever.
But it's all very, it's fun. By the way, that sounds very, it is that like, it's almost like magic, right?
Yeah, it's theatrical. Hello. It's theatrical. Yeah. It's magic with a K.
With a K,
let's go back. So I think what's interesting about me is I like to pick and choose. I took some of those things like that I grew up with and carried them with me. Like I enjoyed the fellowship. I enjoyed the community aspect, like having a community of people, not necessarily those people, but like having a community of people. But like, or like, I loved the fact that food was always involved. There was a table of food, and you could feed people, and it was about taking care of each other. Like I loved that, right? But then it's religion, so it is the box in which they fit what they believe in, and out of that comes spirituality. And I love the reverse of that. I would rather be a spiritual person navigating this world, creating my own box that I want to be inside of that has a lot of doors and windows that I can open and fly out if I need to and go do something else, you know?
There was a piece here with was it John E. L. Tenney, where he was talking
Yeah.
about how his near-death experience just it was not at all what I'd expect either when I was reading it. He kind of saw like everythingness and nothingness and sort of like this infinite connection. And I do think that what it reminded me of is like we're all just shards of the creative energy. And so we all have that ability to kind of go as big or as small as we want to. And I think the way he put it is he said he found power and agency, right, after that experience. And I think the work you do also, it's the same sort of thing you walk away, people walk away from after an episode and they have a sense like this is my home again, or I have the power to set boundaries or communicate. What are your thoughts on sort of like how the work that you do kind of affects people or what kind of impact you're making with that?
I think for me, it's a I don't know, it ebbs and flows. I think it
Ebbs and
ebbs and
flow.
flows all at all times, right? Like
Yeah.
there are people that you meet that just want the experience of like going on a ghost hunt, and you're like, great,
Sure.
I can give you that because that is what you want, and that's as far as you want to go at this point.
It is fun
Totally
too,
fine.
yeah, to hear and see things. I totally get it.
Totally fine. And then there are people that have been doing it for a while that really take to heart our methodologies and the way that we do it, and they want to know more. So they ask you really great questions about, just the how you go about it and how do you facilitate an investigation that is meaningful for yourself. And I was like, well, you set goals, you set your intention, you make sure that when you enter the space, you have your intention set of what you would like to accomplish when you leave, right? You can have an
Right.
experience, great, but like if you want to really find out their name, like what is it? Because they can be, I feel like that it's interchangeable. They can feel that. And so I think it depends on who you're talking to. But what I love most about it is that it's universal. Especially when I was writing this book, I didn't want to make it one-sided. I didn't want it just to be a ghost book for people who love ghosts and love the paranormal. I wanted it to have enough things in the book where people who loved ghosts can get something from it, but people who didn't believe in the paranormal could read these stories from real people and their experiences and just take something from it, whether it's the conversation of pushing forward and having hope from my friend Bart from the last chapter, or like the dream visitation chapters. A lot of people have dreams of loved ones. It's like, well, let's
That is
talk
the
about that.
subtitle
Like
on this too, which is processing grief and understanding death, which is a big part of this because you know that
Right.
something continues, right?
Right. And that's the biggest takeaway for me. It's like, well, they're like, well, what do you get from the book? I get that there is something else, right? It may
Yeah.
be different for everyone. Like it was different for John. He, had that experience when he was very young. At the time, he was a loner. He didn't have any sort of like organized religion. And when he crossed into wherever he was, he was alone, and he was in this forever state forever. Right, they had no time constraint. It was only 7 minutes, right, that he was dead. But like it happens, and when he comes out of it, I love when he says, "I am now after forever. I'm on the other side of forever," which to me is so beautiful because the other side of forever is the next journey. Right,
Yeah.
this is forever. We're gonna go into something else. That's gonna be forever. We're gonna go into something else, and that'll be forever until it's not, and it's the other side of forever. Like to me, that gives myself hope. Right. So those who might not believe in ghosts, but are grieving or going through a loss or dealing with something their own self, it's something you can literally just meditate about, journal about, and find the commonalities because, again, everything that we're doing is universal, I believe.
I agree to, and the dream chapter, by the way, thanks for sharing your own experience also with having someone come through and connect with you. I had a similar thing when my mom passed a couple years ago, and it does give you a lot of, it just gives you this sense of continuum, and it's not the same as having them here in the physical plane. They do come back, by the way. I know you said something in the book where you were afraid of sharing the dream. I think it was good that you did that because it gives people hope, and I don't think it's going to be the last time you connect, or I don't think it's going to jinx you, but I think it was more just like that was a very personal thing that you had to choose to share. So thanks for doing that. It was a really beautiful memory too.
Thank you. I mean, I think about it often, and I wanted to put it on paper. And the biggest reason was, you know, my two aunts, Aunt Wanda and Aunt Patsy.
Yep.
I mean, Aunt Wanda and Aunt Rita, they had dreams probably around the same time I did, to be honest, right? But they never talked about it until it casually came up in conversation. And I was like, if they had only talked about it, or if we had talked about it as a family earlier than this moment, we're talking, oh my God, we're talking almost 10 years down the road. Like if we had just talked about it a little bit earlier, that closure, that like aha moment, oh, that's wild and crazy. She did it for everybody. That's could have come, you know, could have helped us, I think, a little bit sooner.
I think that it's much more like experiences with the other side, with the great beyond, it's much more prevalent, but there is fear of judgment, of being laughed at. And I know I used to have like a regular corporate job where I left, and I remember starting to do this and just wondering, I wonder what those people think. I'm at a point now, I don't care, but there comes a point where you just have to embrace it. It's like, I read cards and I talk to dead people, but it's fine. But I think not everyone's kind of there. Although one of the things that I liked in your book too, was there was a chapter about accessing different parts of your brain. Like when there's some research that's been done, like once you die, maybe this is just us waking up and connecting with that sort of latent skill that I do think that we all have. And it's just a matter of overcoming fear. That's also a big theme in your book too. Not being afraid of just looking at the unknown. You did it in Gettysburg. Right. That was another question I had. Like a lot of people would have run away when they saw that residual haunting, but you kind of like went further down the path into that. So what is it like maybe that you in your own sort of personality, or is it curiosity? Is maybe then it was the thrill, but what is it that keeps you wanting to turn off the lights and turn on the recorder and continuing to connect with things that are unknown? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest reason is that we don't know everything still. Like we don't know everything. Everything is theory,
then.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's research. It always changes. Something happens and it changes the way you think about something else that happened. And so it's always evolving and flowing, which I love. I think that's really cool. I mean, that's research. It's always ever changing. I think the Gettysburg experience for me was almost like a desperation moment. It was like, if you're going to do something, do it now. Like it's going to happen. Right. And I what's crazy is I tell people now, don't have that attitude because you're going to miss something that's right in front of your face.
Yeah.
Right. So the fact that it happened for me and I had that sort of mentality and attitude is I know it was meant to be. Like, I know that it was put in my path for a reason. And I think it was one of those moments that when it started happening, it was like, okay, great. And I knew that I knew that I was safe. I knew that what was happening was supposed to be happening. And I needed to push the boundaries as far as I could. I don't even think I talk about this in the book, but did I talk about the little cat's eye orb that came up?
You did.
Okay,
not, no.
So the story gets a bit. So once I walked into the line of trees, I could hear what sounded like footsteps around me. I could hear again like the rebel yell. Where it's like woo. It's very distant. It like weird light anomaly, spark, whatever. But then this little tiny cat's eye orb, the size of a cat's eye, like a real orb, it was lighting up the side of the tree, came out of nowhere and stopped in front of my path, like where I could go. And then it shot off in a direction as if to say, come this way, right? Come this way. And then like any good horror movie, I turned around.
You
and
did
left.
It. No, okay.
I got out.
Okay, that
I got
was
out because I was like, this is a bit, right? And I left, but but I felt okay to leave because I was like getting a little like, if I don't want to freak myself out about it. That was very weird. I knew that it was calling me in the direction. Maybe there was something I could have seen or something I could have I don't know. But I've seen too many horror movies to be like,
that makes it more relatable,
because
I was like, wow, he just had like all the courage. Because even for someone
walking into the trees. Yeah, walking into the trees was fine. Getting in there and having the experience was fine. But when that little thing showed up and then was like, boom, I was like, no, I'm out.
Well, to that end, has there been, what's like the weirdest thing that maybe didn't make it to camera off Kindred Spirits, or just something that you didn't have all the gear there and you're like, God, I wish I could have captured that, either quirky or unexpected, that, you know, that has been sort of on the cutting room floor that you wish people could see?
There have been moments with clients that are really intense that are, you know, we chose to remove just because it was, you know, emotional or...
That makes sense.
Or even funny. I mean, there was a lady who I adored her, and she had the greatest one-liners you've ever seen in your entire life. And I was like, we can't put any of this on television. But like, you know, it's things like that. I mean, paranormal-wise, if it happened and it was big, you're going to see it. I mean, because you... I mean, that's the nature of what we're trying to do. But there was always like little things. I mean, I think when we filmed at Palmyra, New York, at the spiritualist Sybil Phelps house, she was a spiritualist. I was doing an interview and
she's
heard
the one that did seances,
voice.
Right? Back
yeah,
in the day.
She had the seance, and
that
she was the one
chapter.
That was incredible. And we fought to keep that in because we were like, this is where we come from. She's literally her experience coming back to us conjuring her. At her seance table, in her parlor, her showing up is proof of the afterlife. I'm sorry. I mean, that it is to me. Because that was her religion. She felt that she could do it when
she was
alive.
She
was
doing your work then.
It
was just a different version of paranormal investigation. Yeah.
Exactly. And so at that location, we had a ton of activity that we couldn't show. Like there was a disembodied male voice that happened behind me. We played cards with a ghost. And you're like, how did you do that? I was doing the Estes method with the blindfold and the headphones, and I had the spirit box, and Amy would lay out cards, and then I literally just translated what he wanted to do next with the cards, like literally playing cards with the ghost, which is bizarre. Or like, at the end of the episode, I moved the doctor's bag into a room where there was a bunch of mourning stuff, like mourning dresses and mourning room. And when I moved the bag into the room, because that was the brunt of the activity, right. It was attached to this bag. I came back to the room with Amy and we were asking questions. And just like the Haunted Mansion in Disney World, you could hear like these footsteps coming down the hallway and you heard, ooh,
whoa,
like the saddest moan. And we were like, oh no, my God. And I went and got the bag out of the room and moved it like, it, and I don't know if that made it to the episode, but like it's weird things like that that happen that aren't either like the biggest thing that happened, you know, or it wasn't something that sort of led us to our conclusion, which just mean, you know, makes no sense to put it in. I wish we had like 3 hours to do these episodes.
Right?
It would be better.
I mean, I'm sure that there's an audience out there somewhere, so put it out there. But...
Yeah. Somewhere.
Speaking of, you were talking a little bit about the Estes method, just in case people don't know it, you use a spirit box, but basically one of you, like me, will have headphones on so you can't hear the other person. They ask the questions and it's a way to not be influenced, because sometimes with a spirit box, it's static and then words pop out, right? Is that correct?
Right.
So this is
right.
a way
so
where you can use your own
situation.
Intuition and filter a little bit too.
Right.
Right.
And the questions that are being asked by the other person usually are like history, factual related, like a research that the person listening doesn't know anything about. So if they start mentioning names from the thing that they're holding, it's really cool. What's great about it, I think there's a psychic element to it that
it's
hard to explain on television. So yes, you do hear words. It's in between the static, so it sounds like but you hear like right? Like it's not just like Adam, one quick thing. It's also sounds very distant, like you're reaching through the static to hear it. Then at times you feel the need to say certain words or phrases and you just feel the need. I think we did an episode where I was doing the Estes method and we were doing like a group therapy session in an asylum. And my friend said, what color makes you calm? And I, for some reason, I was just like yellow, but I just felt the need to say the word yellow and it matched exactly with what she was saying. There have been times where you feel what they are feeling. You feel their anxiety or
empathy,
happiness or sorrow. and you're feeling and you try to describe it. And then rare, but occasionally, you'll get the visualization of what they're projecting, something that was traumatic in their life. I remember doing the Toboggan Inn, and I kept saying mom or she left. And I remember getting a distinct visual of this woman in a tan dress that went down to mid-calf. She had pantyhose on, a little kitty cat heel. And then she literally was in a doorway and then walked away. And it was as if I was sitting on the ground as a child.
Wow.
And it was plain as day. It was in my mind's eye. And I could see it. I knew it was connected to the person that was talking. So that's the idea. And also, anyone can do it. It's an acquired taste. I think
sure.
You just have to like practice it. But anyone can do it. It's not like it's a special power or anything.
It sounds to me like from the book and from what you're talking about too, I mean, you're just developing your intuitive skills because you're talking a little bit of clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience. So sometimes you're hearing it, sometimes you're feeling it, sometimes you're seeing it.
Right.
So this, like tarot cards, it's one way to access. And I thought about this morning. I'm curious if you kind of appreciate or prefer to have that level of abstraction rather than doing what Chip does or sometimes what I do and talking straight to the other side. Would you ever want to develop your mediumship further than it already is? Because you are kind of there.
Yeah,
you're starting to enter into it. But
right.
Yeah.
So I always say, by the way, I love your dog making cutest bed.
This is Apollo, co-star of my life.
No, listen, I can't get enough of that dog. It's like, where is my bed? Why isn't it not fluffy? It's so cute. To the second question, like, I think everyone has an ability. I think you just have to hone it. I think we're all connected. I think the idea in the book where you know, they were talking about the death experience and your brain is firing. It's actually creating. It's not misfiring. It's actually working and creating. And it's almost like
an activation.
I think some psychics, and I pose that in the book, like maybe some people just have an early activation, like they clicked into that section. And I think you can find it. So while I can't like talk to your relative, or I can't like give a cold reading or like anything like that. I do think in parallel investigation, knowing that being aware of your senses and your surroundings heightens your own psychic ability. Like I can walk into a room and I can tell you whether or not we're going to get activity. It's as simple as like, I describe it as like, if you're looking at an apartment or a house to buy or rent and you walk in, you go, this space feels great. Or you're like, this space, something's bad. I don't like it. It's the same exact feeling, except it's, you know, you're looking for ghosts. And so, yeah, I do believe that there is a psychic thing to paranormal investigation when you're a paranormal investigator, especially if you've worked with someone for so long, like the two people working off each other very well. Like when we started Kindred Spirits, Amy and I, we would say, I would look at her and I'd be like, yeah. And she'd be like, uh-huh. I'd be like, oh. And she would go, true. And I'd be like, same. That doesn't go well for TV. Right?
So you had to start to overcome that a little bit.
Camera, right. The camera operator would be like, guys, we have no idea what you're talking about. I know you do, but can we just like explain it
for the
people at home? And so it's like that kind of thing, right? And I think if you investigate with people who you get along with, who you've built a relationship with, which I talk about in some of my lectures,
yep.
I think it promotes positivity. It promotes really great energy. I think
safety too. You have
energy.
To feel safe to be open.
Yeah. I think they feel that energy. I think they want to be a part of that energy that you're giving off, that you're creating. You should have to leave your baggage at the door.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will continue to develop all of my skills
in this
life because I think it can only do good. I mean, it can only help.
I agree. Just as someone who has some mediumship, as I was watching it, I'm like, both you and Amy are, because you're seeing and hearing things without the tech gear. So I just wanted to kind of give that confirmation.
One of the shamans that we work with, who's very psychic and connected, you know, said that to us at one point. He was like, and I was like, I felt really honored. I was like, oh, this wise older gentleman who's like so great is like, you've got it, kid. Like, you've got that it. And I was like, thanks.
It's just practice. That's really with anything. Some people, it's super easy. Like Chip can just kind of go there. The rest of us, we work a little harder, but it's all there if you want it. So anyway,
for sure.
Quick question. if you could go back, and I remember reading in the book, sometimes you said you wish you could have spent more time, I think, with the nurses, for instance. Is there any case where you, whether it's, you know, a private client or something on Kindred Spirits or Ghost Hunters, is there anything where you wish you could go back and spend more time, or would you have approached it differently? And why, like maybe why? Or are you pretty happy you did the best you could in every situation?
Listen, I don't like putting too much pressure on the shoulda, coulda, woulda of an investigation.
I think that's smart.
Right? Yeah. Because then you sort of feel like, oh, I could have done better, right? Because we're always evolving, right?
Yeah.
So like me looking at a ghost photo when I was 16 is very different than me looking at a ghost photo now. Like I'd be like, that's not a ghost, right? I can tell you what it is. So I think we evolve. So I don't want to do that. But I think there are cases, like, for instance, these big places that everyone likes to investigate, Waverly Hills, Pennhurst Asylum, Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, these giant locations that are very haunted, right? There's always going to be a spirit or someone there reaching out for someone, right? There's always going to be next. You know, the nurses in Waverly Hills, yes, I want to get back there specifically.
Maybe that's a better question. Is there either like a wish list place that you'd like to go to, or unfinished business somewhere where you're like, you know what, I want to do a little bit more here? Maybe that's a better way to phrase the question.
Yeah. I think well, Waverly's for one. Like, we still haven't made it back to that nurse's wing, and I want to check on my girls. Like, I want to check on my girls. Like, or men, like whoever. Like, I want to check on you guys, figure out what's happening, because I think they deserve it, right? They deserve
that.
And
you talked about the power of prayer and positivity there, too. And I think that was beautiful, too, because kind of bringing a peace or neutrality to the space that wasn't there.
Yeah, trying to give them something that they can't get for themselves. Yeah. I think when you pray for other people or for souls, I think it actually helps them. I don't think that it's, yes, it makes you feel good, but I think in turn it also makes them feel good.
It does,
good,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
For sure. It's like when you pray for other people. So that, for sure, there's always the fun ones that we'd love to get into, like Graceland. Like, let's get into Graceland.
Cool.
We find the ghost of Elvis, you know, the White House. I mean, people have always talked about it being haunted. Disney World, you know, Haunted Man. Give me into Disney World. Let's do that. I mean, there's fun things like that, right? And then, there's probably a countless number of other cases that are just out there that we don't know about, that it's going to be the next thing. It's going to be the next thing that we want to go and do, because again, not thinking of it as just having experiences, thinking of it as what can I do to help the living and help the dead. It's kind of like it happens without us knowing. It's like we're waiting for that case file.
A synchronicity. You're trying to create that perfect connection.
Exactly.
To that end, like, what is it, when you're all said and done and ready to go to the great beyond, what is the legacy that you are kind of hoping to leave behind with all this research? And you're also a little bit of a documentary person here too. So like I'll add that to the list of four other things that we talked about. So
yeah.
Is it to, because there was this really cool thing. You have a ritual you were talking about with gravestones, where you talked about like two different deaths. There's the physical death, and then there's like the death, I don't know if it was like three lifetimes. I'm trying to remember it. Yeah.
It takes three generations to be forgotten, and you have two. It's a Native American saying where you die your first death, and then your second death is when no one ever says your name again. So walking through cemeteries, which you know, I clearly love a good cemetery, but like walking through an old cemetery, especially in New England, and it's kind of overgrown and over, you know.
Yeah, you can see
a name. Reading the name and bringing that person back to life for that moment, and reading their epitaph and thinking about what their life could have been like, and maybe asking some questions, you know, I think that to me is beautiful. And so I guess legacy wise, I mean, that's a bit of a historian
then. You're helping carry on the remembrance of people, or telling their stories, right? Giving them a voice.
Yeah, I think for me, I guess you want people to be like, it's kind of scary to say what you want, because then what if what you want now isn't what you want in 20 years, right? So let's just leave it at it's going to be whatever it's going to be. And if I end up being forgotten in three generations, I hope someone reads my tombstone at some point.
Or your book.
or my book. Yeah, or the book that you find at the dollar bin. Like, just whatever. Like, I hope that much, right? And I think that's what we can all just, I mean, that's really all we can hope for. It's just having something that's sort of like ours forever and letting it just stand that way. And if not, then that's the way it is, you know?
Good answer. And I agree. You're allowed to change your mind, by the way, to the legacy. That's a tough question that even I would say, I don't know. I'm a work in progress.
That's a good question though. That's a really good question.
Let's talk a little bit more about the book. Is there anything about your book that I didn't bring up that you'd like to talk about? Like the creative process, what you hope to accomplish with this, who might benefit from reading this? Feel free to fill them in.
Well, yeah, again, I think this book is, it's written for everyone. I don't think it's one-sided. I think if you, that's why it doesn't say ghost in the title, you know? I think if you like ghosts and you like paranormal stories and you like to deep dive into what a ghost actually is and why they stick around, I think it's a great book for you. If you're looking for comfort because you've lost a loved one or you're grieving over the death of even a pet, I think it can help you because it talks about, how there is something else and you're not alone and there's other things besides this existence and take have faith in that sort of situation. Yep. I think the coolest thing, though, that came about when we touched briefly on earlier our religion, right? Like when I talk about religion, I mean, I think it's chapter 4 or 5 mm-hmm. in the book. We moved it there. Because it was like chapter 9, and I was like, no, we got to put this important. Right at the top, right? And the reason why is because, A, I wanted to just call out the fact, my friend Greg Newkirk mentioned this in our interview with him, but calling out the fact that, like, the paranormal genre in Western civilization is very Christian. It is extremely Christian. It comes from a Christianity background. Like, you can meet someone who's atheist who believes in demons, which is okay, you know? Why not? So I think it was important to put that out there. It was important to like touch briefly on other religions, right? To say that everybody talks about ghosts in different ways, but I can't speak on that because I'm not part of that religion. However, I think it was important for myself and for those who are going to read this book, who are surrounded by Christianity and paranormal Christianity and all that, to talk about what's actually in the text of the Bible. And so for me, it's always been used against me in terms of like, people would slide in the DMs or in the messages and be like, you are doing something wrong. You say you're Christian or you went to school or went to Baptist or you're whatever. You're speaking to demons. It's not a ghost. Like you're in like,
it was
whatever,
a story
right?
of Saul basically where he had Come cast on. Out all of the mediums and then went to a medium himself. So I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's that stuff. It's the fact that I met with Matt Arnold who dissected the original Hebrew text for the time that it was written, for the society it was written, and where he talks about, you know, Jesus, who everyone says, Jesus says this, that, and other. He never said ghosts don't exist, you know? He walks on water, and the disciples are yelling at him, he's a ghost. And he says, I am a divine being. Ghosts don't walk on water. He doesn't say ghosts don't exist. And so for me, having that exploration with this theologian, this professor, who is sort of looking into the paranormal and comparing the two sides, having him tell me from the horse's mouth, from the actual text, that no, it's okay to look at all this stuff. Look at what they did in the Bible. They were receiving messages through
Jesus.
Fire.
Jesus was talking to... Jesus is the ultimate medium, actually. He's a medium, he's a healer, and he did crazy supernatural things, but so did a lot of other people. All the disciples were receiving messages as well. I mean, like, there's a lot of weird supernatural stuff, near-death experiences, resurrections, all kinds of crazy. So
tell me about it.
Suddenly, a deck of cards or an EVP is not such a crazy thing because it's just one way of connecting. I'm with you on that.
And so I wanted to put that first and foremost because somebody might pick up that book and start reading it and have very strong opinions about, this is not good, right?
They've been told it's evil, in other words.
Right, that box, they've been told in that box that this is an evil thing, like tarot cards and sigils and like whatever. And I just wanted to point that out and get it out of the way so that it's like, no, here it is, get it out of the way. take it for what you will. And I think that is a really important chapter. So if you get past that chapter and you keep reading, thank you. If you hate me after that chapter, make sure that you post online that you hate me and burn the book with a video so that it goes viral and
still
everybody
get engagement,
starts buying
yeah.
the book to burn it. Just let's do that. Ban the book in Florida. Let's just do something.
By the way, I highly recommend listening to the audio version of this one. I got both the print version and the audio version, actually the digital too, so I can take notes. But so you got three from me. But I think the reading of it is great. And you have a little bit of a background. Some folks may not know this, but I think your first career trajectory was more Broadway or acting. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I went to school for musical theater. I grew up in Muscle Shoals. So
okay.
If anyone's seen the documentary Muscle Shoals on Netflix, you're going to know why I chose a path like singing path. It's recording capital of the South before Nashville. Everyone recorded there. We grew up around people that were writing for famous musicians. And so when I said I want to be a singer, people would say, okay. They wouldn't say like, get a real job. They'd be like, great, right? And so I grew up in the theater. I grew up singing in church and I went to school at the Boston Conservatory. And I was always fascinated by ghosts. Ghosts was a hobby. And, you know, and I think once I met my husband, Ben, we sort of had the same interest. He went to the Guthrie in Minneapolis, studied classical theater, studied in London. So we sort of had these same interests. Ghost was one of those. And so we would explore together. And then all of a sudden the hobby became the career, right? Which is a blessing. I mean, a lot of people can't say that. I still, you know, think about like, you know, my husband and I run a nonprofit theater company in Provincetown. So we're still in the theater. I could still win a Tony one day. Don't get it twisted, kids. you can find me on YouTube belting my face off. It's fine. So it's like, you know what? I'm still there. And I think there's something to it. I love that you bring it up because a lot of people, when they meet someone or when they know about someone, they only know one side of that person.
Yeah.
Right. And we all have different sides of our lives and our talents and our experiences. And so, yes, paranormal investigation and the study of the supernatural is a giant part of my life. And I love it so much. And I will do it forever and ever and ever. And I will never stop doing it. And I will explore. But also, you know, I like my dogs and I love theater and I love to sing and perform and act and I love to go on vacation and I love a good martini. So like, let's branch out. You
well,
know?
By the way, this is the one thing that I think everybody doesn't get with people that are in paranormal. Like, I don't take cards to go meet friends for dinner. I'm not reading people in the room. It's like we're normal people that have extraordinary experiences, but like also in very compartmentalized parts of our lives. It's not something where you're on everywhere. Certain mediums on
really,
TV, but
listen, and that's a human nature. Like that's human nature. Like it's for everyone. I'm a doctor. You know, I'm a brain surgeon. That's not you. Yes, you are, but you're also like, they probably like golf, I'm going to assume.
Exactly.
You know, it's like they like other things that in, you know, it's I appreciate bringing it up, but I also, to that effect, though, I think it did help me with the audiobook.
It did,
you know,
for sure.
I was like, I love that I can like sit here and narrate this and really make the information one way, but make the stories.
It
really
felt like a conversation, actually,
and,
like this, like you were just talking and sharing pieces from your life. And I thought that the organization was good too, because it was just sort of like. We did start off early, but then it was just pivotal, like light bulb moments. That's what it kind of reminded me of from like that experience with the woman who, you know, was going through a terminal experience to also you talked about, I think one of your friends who had a mediumship experience with someone that had like a mutual friend was passing or whatever. But there were these moments where you just thought like this world is bigger than I thought it was. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger as the book continued. So
I can. Okay. So I'm going to blow your mind for a second. If we have time.
Yeah, we have time.
With the story. So yes, bigger and bigger and bigger. But then this is how small the world actually is in terms of what we're doing here. I recorded the audiobook in this summer and I had 4 days of different sessions throughout the entire summer. And when they approached me originally, they said, we want you to come to New York. We have a studio here that you can do it in New York. And I was like, well, you know, I live on Cape Cod. Is there any way we could do it somewhere in Boston? Because it's summer. Like, please let me get out. Like, it's going to take forever to get off the island. And so they said, yeah, there's a place in Arlington, right outside Boston. And so I drove up and I spent the first 2 days back to back recording my book. And I was getting to know my engineer who was working with me. And he went to Berkeley, which is Boston Conservatory in Berkeley, shared a lot of things.
I went to Emerson, so I'm familiar with the...
So we had a lot of different, like he graduated in 2004. I graduated in 2005. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of similarly experiences. Like we talked about the same cafeteria lady and I was like, girl, she was crazy. Like, just like whatever. Right. We had the same like sort of little friends and we were talking, we were getting to know, and it made a really great welcoming environment for this process that was very difficult. So we get to like the third day and we finished it and we're almost to August. And he's like, hey, listen, I take August off to be with my kids. Because before they go back to school. So I'm going to have my other engineer work with you just to finish up the book. It's going to be great. You're in good hands. And I said, you know what? This is awesome. But I'm kind of sad because we had just finished the first section of chapter 11, which was the dream chapter. Yeah. And I said, you know, my friend Yvette, who went to Berkeley, had this really crazy experience. And so no spoiler alert, but I started explaining to him the story of Yvette's friend who suddenly passed away. They all found out about it. He came to her in a dream multiple times to tell her information. He confirmed it with actual factual information. It's just a wild dream. Yeah. There was a funeral that happened in Pennsylvania and it was snowing in late April and everyone thought it was so weird.
That was
so
beautiful,
And I start to explain this beautiful story because it's one of the most mind-blowing stories for me that's in the book. And I changed, and I said, well, I changed the friend's name to Patrick, because of the family, and again, I'm not going to use his real name here, but I said, like, I changed the name to Patrick, and he looks at me and goes, Peter? And I stopped, and I said, yes? And he was like, Peter, guitar player, Berkeley. And I said,
he knew.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
And he goes, he was my best friend.
Wow.
And I said, what? And he goes, he was supposed to play guitar at my wedding 2 weeks after he died. 2 weeks after he died. And I was like, uh-huh. And then that's I continue crazy. The story and I tell him the whole thing, right? Because at this point, I'm like, I don't know how he's going to receive this. This guy's, his job is to be an engineer to record audiobooks and podcasts. And he's sitting here in front of me and I'm telling him the story about how his friend came to another friend who he did not know, Yvette. Right. He knew Yvette's partner at the time that she was with at the time. He knew him. Right. But did not know Yvette. Oh, and I was like, and so he went home. He read that chapter. He texted me that night and said, I'm finishing this book out with you. I'm finishing it for my friend. Now, here's I want people to really grasp what that means. Out of the thousands of places I could have recorded this audiobook, I ended up in a studio with the person who was best friends of someone who suddenly passed away. That did not know the end and the outcome of the story. Also, he would have never picked up my book. He's not into the paranormal. He would have never picked up my book off the shelf and read it. And also, there was an entire set of friends that were separate from Yvette and her friends. So Yvette and her friends got all that information from Yvette when it happened, when the dream happened. And then 15, 16 years down the road, this entire new set of friends are finally getting that closure, which is so crazy to me.
If I remember correctly, reading it, Patrick, we'll call him, but he was very intent. Is this the one that went three times that was bothering?
Yes.
So he really wanted to get the message through to make sure that the family knew that.
It was a mistake. It was an accident. It wasn't, and they sort of downplayed it. They said it was natural causes and it wasn't.
It feels like Spirit's making sure, absolutely sure that everybody he needs to know found out. So this is like one more finger of that. Yeah.
What's so crazy is I finished that entire chapter with something like this. Maybe this is his final performance. This is his grand finale. Like getting this story in the book. Like maybe this is his grand finale. And you're right. No, it wasn't.
The audio
grand
producer
finale comes months later when I'm randomly recording and
that's
his
really
best
cool.
friend is sitting in the room with me. And so if people, like, you don't have to believe in ghosts, but that to me is so, it's almost a miracle. It's a weird miracle thing. And for me, it makes me think that Patrick, all those years ago, went to Yvette because yes, she was open to receiving this information, but he knew that somewhere down the line, that this was book was going to be written by myself, and that yep. I was going to be in the same room with his best friend who didn't know. And he was like, even when it was so crazy, he was like, I was at that weight. I remember it being feeling like it was very strange that it was snowing. So it's like, it's so bizarre to me. And if wow. when this book goes to paperback, I'm going to narrate the hell out of that version. We're going to tack it at the end of that chapter.
Yeah, please. That is so, that's beautiful actually. And I would think it would be hard not to get emotional there too, because it's just showing, again, we were talking about legacy. It's little things like this. You never really know what kind of an impact you're making, even with your TV series and other things, because I think it just helps people realize, like, it's okay to see things or feel things or wonder about this stuff. So you're normalizing it, having yeah. intelligent conversations and normalizing it, you know?
It's wild. And I think about it, and I still can't wrap my head around it. Like, I want it to, like, blow my mind over and over, but, like, I come to
that's
terms
a synchronicity
with, like, I'm just not
like if I've
it.
Ever heard one yeah. it was meant to yeah. be. You were meant to connect with him, and the whole reason wasn't just because he was going to do a good job with the audio, but it was to get the message. So
yeah,
so you were
so
a messenger
wild.
too, so it wasn't just the person who relayed the dream. So Patrick's working through many people to make sure that everyone yeah. finds out.
It's so wild. It's so
that's
wild.
Really
and
cool.
So
thank you for
I,
sharing that.
Listen, it's yeah, it's a blessing. And when you get to that part of the book, those who haven't read it yet, you're going to be like, oh, no, this is great. Like, you'll really, truly understand it.
Well, thank you so much today for spending some time. It's been just a real pleasure and honor. And I look forward to seeing whatever you guys decide to do next. Hopefully you get renewed. I don't know. That's still out there.
We don't
there.
Know yet. I mean, yeah, it's still out there. If anybody wants to follow, you can, well, first,
yeah,
you can
please.
Get the book
this is your chance to plug the book and your yeah. TV appearances, whatever you'd like to. Go for it.
First, you can get the book Goodbye Hello, Processing Grief and Understanding Death Through the Paranormal wherever books are sold. Amazon's easiest, Barnes & Noble. You go to your local bookstore and ask the mom and pop to bring it out. That's always great because they make some money. If you want to follow along, Adam Berry, adam-berry.com is my website. Yeah, you can Google Adam Berry. You'll find me. Social media, Twitter, X, Adam J. Berry. Instagram is Adam Berry, and then I'm the Adam Berry on TikTok because duh. I'm easily reachable through email, and I love to hear from people who have read the book. And there's also a special group on Facebook. If you're still on Facebook, there's a special group called Goodbye Hello. It's just for people who have either read the book or in the process of reading the book. It's a safe space for people to explore their own thoughts and ideas about the book related to their own life. And it's a great community of, like, building relationships, knowing that you're not alone, and that the ideas in the book are truly universal.
Thank you so much. And again, if you haven't checked out the TV series, please do that as well. It is different than most ghost hunting shows. This is more like paranormal investigation. And again, it's done with a lot of heart, a lot of empathy. And I like that you kind of give people what they need to feel like they can reclaim spaces and feel safe. So thanks for bringing some integrity to the field. I do appreciate that as well.
Thank you very much. It's available on Discovery Plus or Max or wherever. Kindred Spirits.
Max is where I watch it, but yeah, it's all good.
Yeah,
love
yeah.
your t-shirt, by the way, too. Forgot to mention that.
Thank
earlier.
You. Listen, I got merch, you know.
Is
I
that
do.
Your merch? Okay. Where can,
yeah,
is that
Berry
also
merch,
on your website?
Adam Berry. Yeah. AdamBerryMerch.com. I have a lot of different things. Yesterday, I wore one for an interview that says I'm a morning person, you know, M-O-U-R-N.
M-O-U-R, yeah, okay.
yeah, I like it. Listen, I like fun dad pun
yeah.
merch. And so that's where we are. No gloom and doom in this.
No
world.
Gloom and doom, no. But I like the ghost one. I think I'll grab that for myself.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank
All
you.
Right, everybody, thank you so much. Thank you, Adam. And thanks
thank
for
you.
Being my first guest, too. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, take care. I'd like to take a moment to say thanks to everybody who listened to this first podcast. As many of you know, this has been a labor of love. I've been planning it for about a year in advance, and I'm so happy that this has finally launched. If you'd like to see more episodes in the future, remember to like, subscribe, and rate this podcast wherever possible. And on YouTube, leave a comment. Let me know what you enjoyed and who you'd like me to talk to in the future. Finally, if you want to give back a little bit extra and support projects like this, you can also become a YouTube member and you can get more information on my main YouTube channel page. Thanks again, and I hope to see you soon.